Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, Alarmy, check out Alarmist on Patreon for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Here's a preview of our Guest Alarmist series, only on Patreon.
Like, what is that instinct that made you run to the bathroom?
Shame. Oh, 100%. I felt so ashamed. This is like, she was like an older woman too.
Right.
And she had this like,
you were disgracing her.
She was disgraced. Like, make no mistake. If she came in with grace, she was disgraced.
Yes.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now, on to our episode.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the movie My Best Friend's Wedding. Here's what you need to know. Julianne Potter, who also goes by Jules, is a well-respected New York City food critic who made a blood pact with her best friend Michael O'Neill, a Chicago-based sports writer. They both agreed that if they were still single by the time they turned 28, they would get married.
He says, swear, when we're 28, if we've never married, we marry each other. And we've been best friends ever since.
When Michael leaves her an urgent message a few weeks before her 28th birthday, Jules realizes it might be a proposal. However, she's disappointed to discover he's actually calling to tell her he's engaged. Jules realizes she's always loved Michael, and so she tells her friend, George Downs, that she's going to stop Michael's wedding. She arrives in Chicago and is greeted at the airport by Michael and his fiancée, Kimmy, a lively college student. Jules is thrown because Kimmy is not only beautiful and genuine, but she's also wealthy. Her father owns the Chicago White Sox. Instead of telling Michael that she's in love with him, Jules devises a series of schemes to convince Michael he's making a mistake. She forces Kimmy to sing karaoke. She plants an idea for Kimmy to ask Michael to leave his job, and she even pretends to be engaged to George, who's gay. All the while, openly flirting with Michael. Nothing works, and one of her schemes backfires spectacularly. She writes an email to Michael's boss, pretending to be Michael's father-in-law, claiming he wants Michael to take a job working for the White Sox. When Michael finds out about the email, he's devastated that his future wife and father-in-law would conspire to make him quit the job that he loves. Jules allows this to unfold, never revealing her part in it. She feels kind of bad, but then a bellhop played by Paul Giamatti tells her that this too shall pass, and that makes her feel better. At the wedding day brunch, Michael tries to break it off with Kimmy, but Kimmy begs Jules to fix things with Michael. Jules has an opportunity to put the nail in the coffin, but racked with guilt, she tells Michael that Kimmy is crazy about him. The single moment of Jules being a good person is fleeting, however, and in the very next scene, she takes Michael to a gazebo and in a teary-eyed confession, finally tells him that she loves him.
I love you. I've loved you for 9 years. I've just been too arrogant and scared to realize...
She kisses him, but Kimmy is nearby and sees everything. Kimmy runs off and Michael goes after her.
Kim!
Jules, in turn, runs after Michael. Jules steals a bread truck and they all race through downtown Chicago. Jules catches up to Michael at a train station and apologizes. She also confesses to being the one who wrote the email to his boss. She feels terribly and says she's pond scum. Michael says she's lower than pond scum, but he appreciates her honesty. Jules, filled with renewed purpose, sets out to find Kimmy, who's still missing in action. She tracks her down in the Chicago White Sox stadium bathroom.
Kimmy!
And convinces her to go through with the wedding.
Now, I love this man, and there is no way that I'm going to give him up to some two-faced, big-haired food critic.
He doesn't love me. He loves you.
Kimmy and Michael get married, and although Jules feels like she's lost the love of her life, she gives an incredible speech, relieved that it all worked out.
I dreamt that some psychopath was trying to break the two of you up.
Then, Jules gets a call on her giant cell phone. It's George. He surprises her by showing up at the wedding. They dance, and Jules feels relieved and hopeful about what lies ahead. Fun Facts, aka Death Stats. My best friend's wedding was shot on location in Chicago. The film marked Roberts' return to the rom-com genre that made her famous with 1990s Pretty Woman. While it eventually went on to become a hit, the film initially faced harsh reviews and testing screens. Viewers were disappointed in the movie's original ending, which saw Julianne finding love with a wedding guest after being turned down by Michael. My Best Friend's Wedding ranks among the top 10 highest grosses movies of 1997. The film has a worldwide box office gross of nearly $300 million. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact-checking for us is our associate producer, Crystal Dinsberg.
Hello.
And our very special guest today is host of That's a Gay Ass Podcast, Eric Williams. Hi, Eric.
Hi.
Hi, we're so excited to have you on the show.
It is a gosh darn on. I'm so thrilled to be on the alarm and will not stop up breathing.
Ring it.
Well, maybe you could tell our listeners an abbreviated version of your show, which I love. It's so funny. I highly recommend to all.
Oh my God, you're so... It's honestly, it's so such a thrill to be on this podcast because you find out, you know, who's to blame. And my podcast kind of asks the same fucking question. We ask, whose fault is it that you're gay? And who do we blame, babe? And if you're straight, why are you so obsessed with us? So that's kind of... that's the vibe. And, yeah, no, we're actually just bringing back... Well, I guess this episode will have just air right after we premiere the new season, and Dan Savage is our first guest, and just very exciting to have queer and straight allies come on and talk gay shit and have queer and straight audiences listen and enjoy.
Yes.
Welcome to this straight ass podcast.
That's a straight ass podcast. Wait a minute, Clayton, you're on this podcast.
Yeah. Right. Well, on the, it's yeah, not that straight.
On the flavor.
You're pretty homosexual, if I may
It's
say.
True. Well, thank you. I really take that as a compliment.
It was one.
Good.
So we have to start off the show by asking our guests, what is something that's recently alarming you? What's something that's keeping you up at night?
I'm going to be honest with you. It's kind of a devastating tale. What's keeping me up at night is the goddamn cost of therapy. And the story that goes along with this is I've had my therapist for 2 years. She is so good to me. Mm. And I'm very grateful to have insurance. Let me be clear. I'm grateful.
Right. Yeah.
My husband works for a big old company. I get insurance through him. Truly, thank God. However, his company decided to change their insurance out of the blue. And of course, my therapist, his therapist, and our couple's therapist all are not under the new insurance.
That's so, so frustrating.
Like, now I'm like, paying out of pocket just to like maintain a shred of dignity walking this earth and hoping to not want to jump off a bridge. It just feels like, so, and then negotiating with your therapist of 2 years how much you are going to pay. It
awkward
me off. So I'm only doing a session every other week, and so I'm just like raw dogging 2 weeks of life. It's and I'm a girl that needs therapy, so that's keeping me up.
That's so
I
real.
Totally understand.
And you're committed to this. You're like, you're not gonna stray. You will stay.
I will not stray. I will stay. I think she's like done. I love her so much.
Okay.
And there is a world that I could start with someone else. But like, I don't know. You know, when you know. And
yeah,
my gut is like, stick with Claudia.
Yeah. Good therapists are hard to find.
And that is true. Yeah. I mean, like when you catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, never let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with a good therapist. Never let her go. And I was burned. I had a therapist for 7 years who retired. And when she retired, I like cried on my walk to Union Square. Like that's like, so I think I feel like the baggage of getting a new therapist after having one you love. So I'm going to keep her. Do you all, what would you do?
Yeah. Well, I had a therapist break up with me. Kind of like setting me free a little bit.
Oh, like you graduated.
Like you healed, yeah.
Yes, yes. She's like, I think it's time. I think it's time for you to go. And I was like, no!
How did that feel, though? That's kind of like the most amazing feedback from a therapist.
It was nice feedback, and then I felt betrayed. Like, abandoned.
Like manipulated, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, did I really heal, or are you just dumb?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I need another therapist to talk about my abandonment issue.
Mm. Oh, God. Well, then she kind of gave you a gift, then, of staying in therapy.
Yeah. I mean, keep us posted on, you know, your
emotional
relationship
health
with Claudia.
I will.
Your relationship status. And you know who had a complicated relationship status? Our girl Julianne.
Talk
girl
about
Julianne.
Needing some therapy.
Yeah.
Seriously.
It was 1997. We didn't have that yet. It didn't exist.
Oh my God.
This is a mess. It's crazy. Wow. I love how you did that intro, I have to say. I do. That was great.
It's not often that I transition at all with any grace.
Well,
but
this was a good one. And she is. I have to say, I was telling people before we started recording that I have never seen this movie and I just watched it. And I have a lot of really strong feelings about it. Like I really kind of loathed it. And I can't believe how deeply unlikable the main character is. There are so many red flags about this movie.
Now, what about you, Eric? Did you like this movie?
Well, it's funny Clayton says that because I had first watched this movie somewhat recently. It was a few years ago and actually was one of the things that inspired my podcast because I made a video series called That's a Gay Ass Movie. And I would like dissect movies that were very gay. And this is one of them. And I watched it for the first time. It was first year of the pandemic. And I was like, okay, like I get it. Her hair is gorgeous.
Right.
Dermot Mulroney, come on. Him telling her that she looks great without her clothes on. He's so sexy. Mm-hmm. We've got the gay friend. Like, I get it. I get why 97, it had the ingredients of a big blockbuster. But mm-hmm. you are right. Now knowing what we know about, like, boundaries, emotional health, how to treat someone.
Toxicity.
She comes across as such an emotional terrorist. And yes. I rewatched it this morning, and it really is an infuriating watch. But there are so many elements of perfection. Like, every supporting character can sing three-part harmony. What's going on?
It's a pretty, it is a gay straight, but there's so much, like, even the opening number in that, like, big soundstage with the pink walls, and they're singing that number. It's kind of like old school Hollywood. It's like, what is this straight people nonsense that's going on?
Like, I love it, also think it, watching it again with all, like, I thought it could be a musical, which unfortunately is the gayest thing I could say, but, like, it really, there's so many elements of the music and then how, like, larger than life the plot twists are and the drama. But again, she is not, you're right, she's not likable. It's like you find yourself rooting for a junior in college, Cameron Diaz. You're rooting for her to not only lose, but then, like, you're rooting for the character that we don't actually want to root for, like the billionaire's daughter.
Right.
I do think Cameron Diaz's performance in this movie is one of the most underrated performances in Hollywood history. I mean, what a difficult task to really embody and make this very dislikable character on paper and bring her to life and really, at the end, get you rooting for her. I mean, she's charming. She did the karaoke scene. Don't get me started.
I think that's like the whole point of the movie is that, like, it's when you look at the script on its, like, at face value, I think it's, like, not a great script, but it's a vehicle, like, in the mid 90s or late 90s for someone so lovable as Julia Roberts, who can take a pretty toxic character and make it work because we just loved her and you, like, still kind of wanted her to win even though she was doing some crazy stuff.
I mean, I would beg to differ, and I would say it's actually a really great script in that it is really changing the way, and it really was a big deal when it came out. It changed the way we thought about rom-coms and the idea that we absolutely need a happy ending. And I think by the end of this podcast, you're going to see why you should like this movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Can't wait.
Yeah.
Convince us, mama. Clayton's
already against it. Clayton's already never going to happen. Shutting down. But let's start by putting things up on the list.
Great.
And I want to put Jules up on the list. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yes.
She's not going to get away with this one.
No.
She is someone who absolutely needed serious therapy. I'll read something from the Santa Barbara International Film Festival. Julianne is invited to the long wedding weekend, and since she is considered a threat to the bride, she's asked to be the maid of honor. Keep your enemies close, I guess. I'm a busy girl. I've got exactly 4 days to break up a wedding, steal the bride's fella, and I have one clue how to do it, she exclaimed to our vicarious delight. I don't know about our vicarious delight, but Kimmy is not what we expect. She's endearing, sensitive, and attractive, and a perfect match for Michael. Following her worst judgment, Julianne will scheme to sabotage Michael, a sports writer, and Kimmy's chance at happiness. So what we have is a love rectangle, and the character who sets the plot in motion is unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not going to make the argument that Jules is a good person or even a great character. But I do think that the movie as the story is told is actually important in the world of rom-coms.
Okay.
What do you think is the role of Jules then? Like, what are we supposed to learn from this type of character who I love that she's a successful boss ass bitch. She's 27, right?
I know, so young.
But like, what do you think is it doing in the canon of rom-coms for that type of character? Why do you stand behind Jules's toxicity?
I don't know if I stand behind her. I don't agree with what she does.
Okay.
But I think as a viewer, I think we're conditioned to think that we have to agree with what our main character is doing.
That's a good point.
Bravo.
Very good point.
Bravo.
And of course, I understand that you have to, and she is likable in some ways for all the reasons you said. She's a strong woman. It's the 90s. I want to hear about the strong woman, and I want to hear about a flawed lead character, sure, who is still strong. She's female, and she is broken is not the right word, but she is
jaded,
misguided.
Absolutely. And she, thank God for George,
her
BFF.
I mean, he's like there's a lot of like ill intentions in this movie. Mm-hmm. And he's like the one. And for like 97, that's like kind of, I guess, groundbreaking to have like a very likable,
yes,
gay character who's like the good person. They're not just like the
yeah,
you know, what do you call it? A flare or whatever, the film. Like he's like significant and like a good friend.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think let's put George up on the list.
Okay.
On our board. And because he is the person at the dinner in the beginning of the movie when she's having dinner with George. She gets the phone call. She gets the message, right?
Right.
And he puts the idea in her head that Michael is going to propose. He's the one who's like, it's happening for you.
Mm.
He then later redeems himself like instantly when he says, okay, you just need to tell him that you love him. This is not right. So we can actually now go ahead and take him off the board.
Maybe he could be like a big clap contender. So maybe we just leave him.
Yeah, we'll keep him up there. But I want to read a few excerpts that speak to your point, Clayton. This is from E! News. One of the reasons I wrote this movie is I wanted Julia's character to lose the guy and to lose the guy for the right reasons, explains Bass. I wanted for the audience to be in a position where they didn't know what the filmmaker was going to do because they didn't know what they wanted themselves. Mm-hmm. There's also the matter of George, whose very presence in a major motion picture in 1997 is a cause for celebration. On top of Julianne losing the guy, I wanted to write something where the smartest, best, wisest, most terrific person in the movie was gay. There wasn't anything like that in those days. This was the first time that ever really happened. This is from Awards Watch. He plays along with it when Jules hatches a crazy scheme to tell Michael that she and George are engaged, which leads to him leading a fantastic sing-along of I Say a Little Prayer for You at the rehearsal lunch. Everett's performance is the strongest of the four, providing a solid pillar for the rest of the cast, just as George does for Jules. It's remarkable to see a gay character in a 1990s film who is more secure in himself and his sexuality than the straight leads.
Mm. I also think the movie, while we're not supposed to know who to root for, I do think ultimately the overarching like read that we should take is it's a story about friendship, about also accepting your insane friends, because I think,
yes,
we all can name the one person in our lives that are the chaotic friend, and I think Jules is the chaotic friend, and like you're saying, to have the gay guy be the actual like anchor, the wise one, though, like that is incredible. And if I had in 97, I was, you know, a young person, and if I had seen this movie and have them unapologetically say that he was gay and he's having a gorgeous dinner party at his home, which, right, by the way, I kind of am surprised by the demographic of that dinner party. It's like, I don't know if you remember, it's like two,
yes,
like kind of older straight,
yes,
couples.
Yeah.
And like, yes, there's a man on the other side of the table. Is that his partner?
Yeah,
is that,
we don't know. Like, we don't go that far.
That's the only gay misstep I will give this movie, is that his dinner party is with like Woody Allen. Like, I'm not exactly sure like what that dinner party came from, what the conversation is.
The one thing I have to say about George and the ending, which I think is a little bit irresponsible from a filmmaking perspective.
Irresponsible. I can't wait to hear.
Is the fact that this kind of toxic, unhinged character who spends the whole movie emotionally terrorizing her friend, I think Eric, you said she's an emotional terrorist, which is a great way of putting it, in the end does get her happy ending because her friend, who maybe is almost enabling her, flies back in to dance with her at the wedding, sets a kind of dangerous precedent for straight women in their relationship to their gay male friends, where they think, if everything falls apart, don't worry, my gay boy is going to go above and beyond to like rescue me from it. And that to me is like,
I can see that perspective, especially now in 2024.
I mean, it's a small thing, but to me, I'm watching like, oh God, do I have to do that now?
No, the answer is no.
Well, it also like,
can it just be a phone call? Like how you do
it? It begs the question too, like what is going on in George's life that he can make that last minute trip again and B wants to like that. I think that might be behind a little bit of like, assuming that he has nothing else going for him except his straight girly Jules,
right,
who can't help but steal a bread truck and go on a goose chase down Michigan Ave. like that's, he's on call for her. I think I can see that, but
that's the rom-com world.
Yeah, that's the rom-com world. Yeah,
you know, it's like,
I loved it. I thought it was the perfect ending. I really did. And I, you know, it's funny because I know we're at the board and we put Jules up, and with George, we're going to give him the clap, hopefully. What, that sounded really bad, you guys. But anyway, you know. I really, really, really think that Jules is a very real character, as Eric pointed out. Like, that's somebody who completely lost it. But this was also, these were emotions that were like deep-seated that all of a sudden came out. And we watched somebody who's unprepared to deal with the emotions. So that's why I like it. I like seeing somebody who has an unexpected moment. Now, everything she did was horrible, like the decisions she makes along the way. But watching this character and then watching George see her go through all these emotions, and then when he gets her on the phone and says, "Who's chasing you?" That part is so powerful for me because I love how he knows that she's losing it. She's spiraling. And I just think that, I don't know. I love it. I love her.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important to, you know, in every rom-com, there's always the best friend who's along for the ride, just because we need them for storytelling purposes.
Right, to ground
it. and you're always questioning yourself, being like, why are they so available? So that's just the role that he's been cast in. But I in the efforts of like putting things up on the board.
Yeah, we got to get some stuff on here.
I want to put the fairy tale of the happy ending, or, you know, up on the board. This is from Woman's World. Despite a conclusion that deviates from the norm, the film's director, PJ Hogan, laid it out in an interview with The Ringer. Screenwriter Ronald Bass, had always said, "I really want the ending to say that sometimes the person you love the most isn't a lover. You still have to find happiness where you can, and that's why the movie has lived on. It leaves you with hope." This is from Us Weekly. The focus group didn't want Julianne to have a happy ending, Hogan explained. They still hadn't forgiven her. They just weren't ready for her to end up in the arms of another guy. I thought the answer was George, because the film really worked when Rupert was on camera. Rupert and Julia's chemistry is so great. Hogan tweaked the final act in the film to have Julianne walk off into the sunset with her platonic soulmate, George instead. So just for, so people understand, I believe that the first ending to the movie had her falling in love with another guest at the wedding. And then a focus group was like, "We hate this." And then they changed it. I just want to read another excerpt. This is from The Ringer. If you've been through a breakup or are not in a relationship, My Best Friend's Wedding is a really great romantic comedy for you because it's realistic. Even if you didn't live the rom-com dream, that doesn't mean your life is over, and it doesn't mean you'll never be happy again. There may not be love, there may not be sex, but there will be dancing. Which is such a great, iconic last line in a movie.
It's also, I think, the movie is very smart to be realistic about love between friends. I think historically speaking, if you're in love with your best friend or a close friend, how many times statistically has it actually been reciprocal on both sides?
I don't know. I'm just scared of, to know that statistic.
Well, I think it's in a way, not to make it now like a fucking queer studies class, but I do think in a way that if you think about the relationship between, what is it, Michael, Dermot Mulroney's character, Michael and Jules, in a way, it's almost like, it reminds me of when I was in high school, deeply closeted, and I absolutely was in love with one of my closest guy friends. And it was very like, I felt it deeply. I would listen to music in the car on the drive home and imprint every lyric to be about him. Sure. I mean, just feel these deep feelings of longing and knowing it would never come to fruition. And then ultimately when I came out, I kind of realized that not only was it not going to happen, but he was kind of a dick. And it was like a huge... but taking the blinders off, because when I came out, he said to me, instead of just being like, I'm here for you, he said, so were you ever attracted to me? And I was like,
Jesus.
I told him no, which was a huge lie, because I only thought about his happy trail for years. Yeah. But no, I think like my best friend's wedding, it is true that disaster can follow when you do come to terms with your real love for a deep friend, because that can really fuck up the relationship. And I don't know what, if this movie were to continue, what would go on between Jules and Michael. But like, how could Michael, as like a functioning adult, be okay with what Jules did?
Yeah.
There's, I feel like
I really want him to go on the board, like for sure.
Let's put
like,
him up.
Who, Michael?
Yeah, Michael sure. needs to go up Horrible. On the board.
Responding to that, Eric, and your crush's response, another thing I think would be fun to put on the board is, which I think is apparent in this movie, is like main character syndrome, where everyone kind of thinks that they're the center of the universe. And for Jules to get this news that this guy that she's been stringing along for 9 years is suddenly like, yeah, moved on. Suddenly she has to make it all about herself. And I feel like a lot of them are they all are kind of operating from this, like, I'm the center of the universe, so I'm losing something or I'm gaining something. I need to win something. It's like very, I don't know, like that, it's human. It's very human, but it's like very, that's like a lot of the toxic for me.
Obsessed with that response.
A wedding also elevates those behaviors. I mean, have you been to a wedding where there was a person in one of the bridal parties or groom's people who had to make sure to let everyone know how hard they were working to make sure that the person getting married is happy, or making sure that they are proving how instrumental they are in a way?
The
that's
closest
like,
friend, the most important person there. Like
that's
absolutely.
Jules at the baseball game when she's serving the beer and she's giving a show. I mean, that is like main character syndrome to a T. But like she's being asked to do it. I mean, she walks in, all these guys are ogling her fucking whatever outfit she's wearing at the baseball game, and she's like, all right, well, I'm gonna now schmooze with a younger brother and press my tits against him. And
it's so awkward. I mean, she really turns it on in that scene. You're like, honey, take it down a notch. Calm down.
She really does.
The flirtation
did
is
find
heavy.
Out a statistic. I found out a statistic real quick. Yeah. So it's 68% people started off as friends in romantic relationships. So 68%, that's by Psychology Today in 2021, which is huge, but it doesn't say best friends. So I think what Eric is talking about is something different. I think that's just people who are friends first, not your best friend. Your best friend has a whole different level of significance.
No, I think that's actually a great response, because in a way, you need to be careful with the journey of your friendship going into lovers. And I think that if with a best friendship like this, I think if I may be scientific, if it reaches over a certain amount of years of friendship without romantic feelings expressed, I think that the risk level rises and rises and rises.
Really?
So my projection on that statistic is probably like, if you're a friend for a year, you can have a little flirty banters and it's not that big of a deal. But then if you're friends for 9 years and then I don't know, but
yeah, there's a lot of issues there that you haven't said how you feel at all. Like, there's some things that all of a sudden they come out at the wrong time. It's going to be the wrong time. It's been 9 years. Like, how?
Well, and that's the difference here is they make it very clear. They kind of open this movie with the story of them and that crazy 1 month that they spent wherever it was, you know, in Tucson or whatever, where they had that like really hot and heavy past. So it's like clear that they had that, but chose not to do it. But she's obviously in love from the first second you see her, even like, hear his name, you like know what this journey is.
I mean,
it would have been different if he obviously was single. Like if
right,
I would have been absolutely rooting for them to have they're on the architecture tour of Chicago. They pass under the bridge. I would love to see them suck face. However, knowing that he has gone through an emotional journey of like becoming independent of this best friendship, that's where you're like, oh, well, now Jules is just actively trying to put him back into his 21-year-old self of college days with Jules. When it's like, honey, he's moved on.
And it just shows how that kind of like jealousy and that competitiveness really, it really sparks
that on the
thing
board,
of like,
jealousy.
Jealousy. Because it's that thing of like, I don't like you that much until someone else likes you and I have the fear of losing you.
Yes.
And I'm suddenly afraid of losing you. And you, I mean, I think now in 2024, we all know that we are able to separate. I hope our listeners are able to separate, you know, that feeling. It's not that you really, really want them. It's that you want to like be seen by them in a certain light, right? It has nothing to do with you actually wanting them. So that fear of like losing how someone perceives you is scary.
And I
feel like that's what she's going through at the moment, which I don't know how we encapsulate that, but it's like something like fear of loss, like a fear of loss.
Fear of change, maybe something like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's so much with that, but I was gonna suggest one more thing to put up on the board, which is I love Cameron Diaz like as a whole, but in this character I could not with Kimmy. I just couldn't, like, asking her to be part of the wedding, I would have fought back a little
that
bit.
That was really,
I don't really know
bizarre.
Her.
Yes,
I don't know her, you know what I mean? I thought that was a little cray to
although
ask a stranger like
met?
You're gonna
haven't we all met that person who you meet for like, you know, it's like you met them over a weekend and by the end of the weekend, they're just like, you are my best friend. Not to say that that's a huge red flag and, you know, all of your alarms should be going off, you know, like careful. But we've all met that person who just like dives right in.
Mm-hmm.
They don't hold back. And that I feel like her, like Cameron Diaz's character is Kimmy, is she's also like been put in a very unfortunate position because of this this messy relationship that her fiance has with an ex. Let's call it what it is. It's an ex who's like stayed friends, who he's stayed friends with. I don't think they're best friends. I think if anything, it's Jules and George's.
Those are the best friends.
Jules and George go to her quote unquote best friend's wedding.
Yeah, you don't find out that your best friend is getting married 4 days before the wedding and they've been dating a 20-year-old and who's in college. Like, that's not like, you are so out of touch.
Why didn't Jules talk about Michael Moore to her gay best friend?
Until
and like, why are we hearing about this now when that's another, I think, for the board is like,
what do you want to call it?
Jules, we'll call it, what about
communication? What about
throwing out the word best friend, throwing out the word like
that's
a lot of best
thing.
Friends going on.
Yeah. Right. Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Like, just the label of best friend.
Adults, like, people over a certain age saying, this is my best friend. And by the way, I'm guilty of saying, like, to let someone know how much I love them. Like, oh my God, one of my best friends. Because that does carry weight for certain people. But there is a slippery slope to the overuse of the term best friend.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Especially when you're over the age of what? 21?
12.
I was gonna give people a little more grace and say 30.
Okay.
And I guess if that were the case, then and they're 28, like they would, in my world, get a pass.
Sure.
28-year-olds get the pass.
I think your 20s, you're still figuring it out. You're still a child who's transitioning to be an adult, and you have like these like little tentacles of
yes.
of childhood like that are still like stuck to you.
That's very nice. The fact that the movie opens and she's this 27-year-old big successful food critic, I'm like, what yeah. world is this happening in? Like, this is so unreal. Like, they're just like so wealthy. There's no concern about like, she says some line about like, you're getting married in 4 days. Like, do you have the weekend off? And then she just spends the next 4 days herself trying to sabotage the wedding. Like, nobody has any responsibilities. They're just like successful and causing a like ruckus.
Yeah,
I want to know, I mean, at what age did Jules get on track to be like one of the head food critics? And they're like, there's 12 people in a kitchen staring out the window to see Julia Roberts at 27
right.
to enjoy the tartare.
My God. Okay, there's a lot. Based on what we just talked about, I feel like there's a lot to put up on the board. I feel like
yes.
this was a listener recommendation. That someone said that we should put being a food critic up on the board.
Okay.
This is a Mountain Made Jinda Bine. I'm sorry, I butchered that. Being a food critic goes up on the board. Every time she goes to work, she has people fawning over her and waiting for her every word with bated breath. And then suddenly when she decides she's in love with her best friend and she doesn't get the same response, it's unacceptable and she has to ruin everyone else's life about it. So food critic hate out there.
I do think like there is something to that. I mean, maybe this should get folded into, but I had the same thought. Like there's just a lot of like selfishness and ego involved with some of these characters.
Well, you can decide to cancel me if you want, but as someone who has worked in a restaurant and it has been around a lot of restaurants, I find that I'm not close friends with any fancy famous chefs, but if I were, I have worked with enough, and my husband has worked with enough to know that a chef and the kitchen environment at a fancy restaurant is hell. It's full on war. And
yes, they're monsters.
They're not known to be like, if Jules is six is if Jules is thriving in this type of industry, she's not here to make friends. She's giving.
Oh,
right.
I think, wow. I mean, can you imagine a head food critic at 27? Like that's a monster.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Wow.
I'm reminded of the contestants on The Bachelorette or The Bachelor who are like, I'm not here to make friends.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
No, wait, here's my next question. Okay.
Yes.
If Jules were cast on a reality show of 2024, what reality show would Jules go on?
Oh my God, what a great
Bachelor.
Question.
Do you think
she'd be the Bachelor?
Yeah.
And she would be the villain.
Traitors would be good. She would be good in Traitors.
And she would be
she would
absolute
drop
traitor.
You. Yeah.
Yeah.
She'd be chaos. She would be in chaos to the house for sure.
Yeah.
What's the one where they swap pairs? Oh, the ultimatum.
She oh might my like God,
yeah.
She might have the stomach for the ultimatum. Yeah.
Yeah.
could she do Love is Blind?
No.
I don't think she would. Yeah, I don't think she would sign up.
She's too egotistical for that.
She's what she would be.
See the guy and be like, you know what? I'm gonna call my gay ass friend.
She would be one of the ones who like you see in the house, but then you never see her dates because like they don't go anywhere.
She didn't make the cut. Yeah.
But we got to put up, we're running out of time, so I'm going to bear, like, just try and get a few of these up on the board. Marriage packs, right? I mean, they're 28 years old, honey. You're just like, oh, you're not going to be married by 28 and you have to, you're going to agree to marry this guy that you.
Yes. I think along with that, you could see maybe ageism. Like, why are they so rushed to get married before 28? Like, you're still pretty young.
I mean, societal pressures to get married young.
Okay.
Has to go up on the board.
Definitely, definitely.
This is from ABC News. Social norms have shifted a bit since 1997. So it's possible, if not probable, that if the film were to be recreated today, Jules and Michael would be a little older. According to a 2013 Pew Research Center analysis, the median age for marriage is steadily climbing at 26.5 for brides and 28.7 for grooms. The study also indicated that in 2013, this is an old study. What is the median age for people getting married
on it,
right, in 2024? Because this is already in 2013.
Yeah, they're basically backing up the claim and being like, it's younger. So yeah, we need something modern. Yeah.
Yeah. So regardless, the you know, median age for marriage, people getting married, it has gone up. I got married young. And still,
you did?
Yeah.
I was there.
But how old were you?
I just turned 26.
That is young.
Very young. What was I doing?
Still happily married, though. It's really worked out.
The wildest thing.
Great couple.
Yeah. But I definitely was the first.
Oh,
yeah. Go ahead.
You ready? Okay. The median age for men is 30.2 years, while women is 28.4. So they're.
Okay.
I haven't really shifted as much for women.
Yeah.
I'm on the higher end.
So if that's normal. Yeah. But like, if that's what's the median age now. So her 28 year pact would be, I don't know what nowadays, like 40. If I'm not married by 40.
35. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
35, 40.
Sure.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Which doesn't sound that bad now to me.
That sounds right.
Something on the board, Rebecca. That's cool.
Yeah,
I was thinking, what about just like waiting too long to say something or too little too late? Like, I don't know which one is better, but like,
I like too little,
you know,
too
when
late.
They're under the bridge and then that sun thing hits them and they had a moment where they both could say something. That really kind of bothered me because of Michael. Again, I think he's crazy, but the way he was looking at her, it's like he wanted her to tell him. And so I don't know if there's something with them both being silent about their feelings that I wanted to put on the board. I'm not sure how to word that, but that's,
I like too little too late. There has to be a certain point.
It's forcing a square into a circle. It's like they, if they had the opportunities over this many years,
right,
and they're still face to face on a romantic cruise and it's still not happening
and flirting heavily, like it's not like friend chat, there's a real, like,
he flirts tension with her, like from the second she gets in the car.
Yeah,
it's awkward. I mean, it's awkward knowing that she's there for his wedding.
Maybe they,
I'm
just
also
both
having
need
a flashback
that.
Remember where they're both laughing about some trip they went on? It might have been at the karaoke scene, and they're laughing.
Florence. They're laughing about Florence.
And Kimmy's trying to, like, I love Florence. And like there's something about two people excluding a third person and knowing that they're doing it. So, and then performing how much fun they had while knowing the other person wasn't there. That's fucked.
I think it's probably the best that they didn't end up, because there'd probably be like a terrible couple, just like really nasty
nightmare.
Two people together. Like, the worst friends.
A food critic and a sports writer.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine like serving them at a restaurant?
They would never get invited to any of, they wouldn't be going to Michael's dinner parties. Let's just put it that way.
No, not invited.
But I really like that, Eric. What can we call that? It's like their exclusivity. Like they're just so exclusive.
It's a little bit High School Mean Girls. I think they're a little bit of like, they're a little bit of enjoying
mean girls mentality. Yeah
they're enjoying,
like, egocentric. They're egocentric because they're like so wrapped up in each other that they're not paying attention to all the other disaster. Or
it's also just, you can't sit with us. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. I love that. Okay, lastly, because we just have to start knocking things off, I do think we need to put the email up on the board.
Oh my God, I have so many problems with this freaking email. First
okay,
of all,
go on, I'll let you go.
The way that she literally types in like to so and so, the director of whatever, like it's a literal snail mail letter. Like, have you never sent an email before in your life?
No, it's 1997, probably.
And she's like talking it out and then save for later. And how does it get sent? We never learn how it suddenly gets sent.
I thought it was that the dad tells the secretary, send my emails.
Oh, there's
I missed that.
Yeah.
Then that's where,
yes.
Okay.
After she leaves, he just like turns around to the secretary and says, send my emails, which is like
that's not a thing.
He needs to go on the board for that. Just kidding. But that's horrible.
The man should be sending his own emails.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe. So should we put Kimmy's dad up on the board for forcing a secretary to send emails?
Yeah. Send your own emails.
It never
check
would
your
have
emails.
Been sent. It never would have been sent to Clayton Point.
But I mean, what is that instinct, right? To sit down and really want to sabotage someone's career. That is deeply disturbing that she thinks that's okay.
And weird that he's able to forgive. I mean, like from the kiss in the gazebo that Kimmy witnesses, that then sparks the chase to like the scene in the bus, is like literally only 20 real time minutes happen between those moments. And he's already like forgiven her. I'd be like, you're out of your freaking mind. You just almost cost me my job and my marriage. And now we're just sitting here going to go find her and get me to the wedding. Like, get out of my life, crazy town.
Maybe Jules has something over Michael's head. Like, why is he forgiving her over and over and over?
Because he likes
probably
attention.
Witnessed him. Or that. I was going to say she witnessed him kill someone.
Their blood, they're in it for life.
I know what you did last summer, crossed over with my best friend's wedding.
Yeah, that was that crazy summer in Florence that they're like, remember Florence?
Yes!
Remember that?
It's more like, remember Florence, right?
They killed the chef. Yes. She then took, there's something there. There's something there.
It is fishy. All right.
Yes. Yes, to answer your question, yes. One more thing. Ignoring red flags should go on the board.
Yes.
Because I think that's what's happening all over the place. As you guys were talking, I was just watching you guys. And I'm like, there's so many red flags. And so you should put that up there.
I love that. I mean, but yes. The from the start of the movie, you just know that there's a problem here. Okay, so I feel like we have a great board. Let's take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off the board.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, who's to blame for my best friend's wedding shenanigans? Is it Jules, George, the fairy tale of the happy ending, Michael, main character syndrome, jealousy, competitive nature, fear of loss, what about me-ism, the best friend label, being a food critic, marriage pacts, societal pressures to marry young, too little too late, you can't stay with us, egocentric, the email, Kimmy's dad, or ignoring red flags.
Hefty board. Wow. Right off the bat, nothing is jumping out as an easy thing to take off. But I feel like we can fold a few things into each other. Yeah. Why don't we start there? So, for instance, egocentric can fold into you can't sit with us.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I think so.
Kimmy's dad does fold into the email. As much as I don't like that he just makes his secretary send his
email. I mean, really, he's a victim. He got his email hacked.
You know, that's true.
He didn't really know this was happening. Irresponsible, but whatever.
Yeah.
Marriage
pacts. I feel like marriage pacts folds into the societal pressures of marrying young.
Definitely.
That's why they did it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think jealousy and competitive nature are one and the same because I think the jealousy leads to the competition.
So yeah.
Do we
and
fold
I feel
that
like,
into jealousy then, competitive nature, or vice versa?
I think we can fold both into the main character syndrome.
Oh, okay. I like that.
That kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fear of loss. I get that.
That would be like the what about me-ism. It folds into that, I think, maybe.
Yeah, because it's like, why can't I have that? And I think, yeah, fear of loss would be a part of that.
And so would, I feel like, would what about me-ism fold into main character syndrome?
Yes. I think so. Mm-hmm. I think that's what that is.
The best friend label is not just feeling like we can blame that, is it? I mean, it is called My Best Friend's Wedding, so maybe I'm overlooking something.
I think the label
itself is not what we're blaming. I think it is the fallout from the expectations of best friendship, which I think are better explained by the main character syndrome, by the you can't stay with us. I think that is more important than the label itself.
Yeah,
it's Jules being in the wedding. Like, she has no reason to be in the wedding. So that's where that, I think, was coming from too, was like, you're my best friend. Can you be in my wedding? Like, I don't know you. You're here
to
sabotage.
I do think this is a PSA to all the listeners too, if you haven't heard, that you can't really be using that term fast and loose. Like, there, it should have significant meaning, and you should really be intentional when you're using it, because to Eric's point, people have different expectations and understanding of that label, and it can get pretty messy if you're not careful.
And if you're not 22.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, too little, too late.
That to me almost kind of folds into main character syndrome, because it's kind of like when you are the center of the world, like, you don't think you have to, like, the rules don't apply to you. So, like, you do things on your own time because you're the center of the universe. So it's like, yes, it is too little too late, but I don't think you're thinking that. Maybe that's a stretch.
Yeah. No. I was just thinking, I was like, oh, wow. I wonder what it's like to be a person who is so laid back.
Girl, can you imagine how nice that would be?
Like, wow. Because I live like I don't have enough time. Like, the time was yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's all over. There's no hope. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I feel like we could take that off the list and fold it into... We could also fold that into ignoring red flags.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, the food critic, being a food critic, that folds into Jules.
Yeah.
I also want to shout out the listener who said that. I think that's so fucking funny that just, like, we can just blame food critics as...
toxic members of society. Yeah.
That really tickled me.
So then we are stuck. So the board is still large. Yeah,
I feel like maybe societal pressures to marry young and the fairy tale happy ending, like,
absolutely,
similarities.
Let's fold societal pressures to marry young into this fairy tale of a happy ending.
Sure.
What is
George
about?
Is not George is not, he's not obviously something.
No.
Bad,
oh, so no. Yeah.
We're going to give him the big clap, I think, is what we're going to do.
He's a good guy.
What is it about fairy tale happy endings?
Yeah, I mean, I really hear like the writer saying that they were kind of like playing against that, like kind of, and how you were saying this kind of challenges the notion of the rom-com, Rebecca, which I do think it is very like unconventional in that way. But it is funny how there is like a weird second happy ending with like, well, she didn't derail the marriage, but she still has her devoted real best friend who's going to dote on her because she needs the attention kind of thing.
I guess I see why you read it that way. I guess the way I read it was more just like you can pick yourself up, you know, when the worst happens, like you can still find hope. And, you know, when your perceived worst happens, like you lose the love of your life. There, you know, life goes on and there you can still find joy and happiness in other places. I do feel like we put so much pressure on like finding your match, your soulmate, that person who's going to make you happy for the rest of your life. And that is such, that is to the detriment of humanity, I think. It's just so much pressure.
I agree. And I do also think that a slight sidestep is folding in, you can't sit with us with main character syndrome. I think that is a little bit of, you can't sit with us because we're the main character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the email folds into the main character syndrome as well.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. So we're left with Jules, the fairy tale of the happy ending, Michael, main character syndrome, and ignoring red flags. Which I like because it's alarmism, but I do feel like we can take it off the board.
Yeah. I agree.
We're always promoting alarmism here. So here's my thinking. Tell me what you guys think. I think we send the main character syndrome to the alarmist jail and we slap. It's between Jules and the fairy tale of the happy ending.
Jules needs to be.
You think she needs to be particular?
So unhinged. I mean, she is the driving force of this movie.
Michael too, and I
think Michael right. too. That's what I. Yeah, no, and
I
also
love that Crystal. Cool. Crystal wants to make sure to take Michael down. Yes. Clayton wants to make sure to take Jules down.
No, I see. Honestly, I would say to be like super specific, you slap and Jewel. It's Jewel. Slap and jail either Jules and Michael because they are together. Both pretty like. They
so
are
like
they embody main character syndrome. They embody this like need to have the fairy tale ending. They did the pact. Like it's all, they're the driving force.
Well, to that point, I think that they essentially fold into the main character syndrome.
Sure. That's the broader heading for sure.
They are infected with the main character syndrome.
And you know that all of their friends cannot stand to hear about their drama.
Yes.
Like that. Oh. I feel like Jules and Michael, they deserve each other, even though they don't deserve anything.
I mean, you're so right. Michael does not deserve Kimmy.
The way that Kimmy describes him, like that whole scene about, like, oh, he's like a sloppy mess and he's snoring and this and he's great. Like they really paint him out to be a very unlikable person who was in love with the lead character, who is, in my opinion, a very unlikable person.
Yeah.
Like they really are meant for each other.
I'm so sorry to, this is my now baggage being spewed out, but I would still, even with all the snoring, Dermot Mulroney, I don't care if that character is nasty. He's so.
That's a different.
Okay.
But that not to be overlooked.
Not to
though.
Be overlooked.
I mean, I think that's so human. It's like some people are just so freaking hot that they get away with this kind of stuff. It doesn't make it good.
Michael does.
I know. And that is upsetting. That is upsetting. But like, so is Jules, Julia Roberts. It's like she embodies, she can, who else could have played this character, this
such
like
a
very
good question.
Despicable character?
I had that thought. Know? I was like, if somebody else were cast in this, would it be as successful because she's just like such a darling?
Are you like, talking about casting in 97 or
yes.
to do it now? Okay.
Like if there were I can't think of like a 97-esque like peak actor who played more like the villainous kind of like campy person that you might be like, oh, they're just kind of like real nasty versus
Selma Blair.
yeah.
Or like, Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock is the one person who I think could have played Julianne.
It's true.
She's probably the one other person.
I mean, it's kind of, and then Michael would be just Hugh Grant, like
Hugh Grant, yeah,
replicate yeah.
Sandra Bullock yeah. rom-coms.
Because he's just so hot and he's charming that they get away with everything.
And Meg Ryan could be Kimmy. She probably.
Oh my
brilliant.
God!
Brilliantly,
yes,
great. I love that.
Yes,
we should have been in casting back in the 90s.
Yeah, but I mean, but still, like, very few people could have pulled this off.
True.
And but anyway, so then that leads me to believe that we send main character okay. syndrome to the alarmist jail, and then we slap our notion of this fairy tale of the happy ending.
Okay.
Because it's love what got us here in the first place.
Which basically yeah. we're blaming Ronald Bass for writing it this way. Come on, Ron.
No, I think I'm blaming society because
no,
like
I agree,
okay,
of course.
So, you know, the society, the fact that he was going against the grain obviously
right.
tells us a lot of like what we needed to hear at the time. You know, we
mm-hmm.
need to be shocked. By a non happy ending,
right?
I think we're back to wanting happy endings now. We've had way too many.
The last few years have been pretty rough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep. God, please give us something to not want to end it off with.
Yes. Okay, I'm gonna call it. George, you're getting the big clap. The fairy tale of the happy ending. You're getting the big slap. Main character syndrome, you're going to the alarmist jail. Eric, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us dissect this apparently controversial film from the 90s.
I'm so glad we got to dive in and have really difficult conversations, but ultimately conversations that I think are going to help the listeners and us move on from this traumatic film.
Yeah, and keep us posted on your relationship with your therapist, because we really need
my
to
best
that.
Friend. Yeah. My best friend, as in my therapist. Yes. I will let you know if I continue to go out of pock and if I continue to afford my rent.
In the aftermath, a staged musical adaptation of the movie, featuring songs by Burt Bacharach and Hal David, was announced to be performed on tour in the UK and Ireland in September of 2021. But sadly, it was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The Alarmist is now on Patreon. Subscribe and get ad-free content along with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/thealarmist or check out the link in our show description. Visit our website, www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram @thealarmistpodcast and on Twitter @alarmistthe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with editing by Molly Hockey and fact-checking by Chris Smith. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Crystal Dinsberg. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado Smith. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the 1931 China floods. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.